The Pampanga River spills cold from the mountains of northern Luzon and courses south through the rice country before emptying into Manila Bay as a broad, mazy delta of brackish channels, aquaculture ponds, and mangrove swamps. The longest river in Luzon, the Rio Grande de la Pampanga, as it is sometimes called, is the island's central drainage, flowing thick with silt and volcanic ash. Much of the year, the Pampanga runs swift and wide and deep, and even in the dry days of January, it can be a treacherous stream in places, especially if pulsed by a surprise winter storm. For most of the dry season, however, the river braids quietly through the long reaches of the central plain, the turbid water swirling around sandbars, skimming low along the banks. As the rangers approached the Pampanga at 5:15 on the afternoon of Tuesday, January 30th, shortly after leaving Platero, they were pleased to confront the river in its more placid, winterized state. Spread out before them was a modest stream, gently churning through a dry floodplain several hundred yards wide. Standing at the banks, Musi realized that the raid on Cabanatuan, as it had been planned, would not have been possible in any other season. Hauling his men and equipment across the royal of a fully engorged Pampanga would have been logistically difficult at best, while attempting to ferry 500 weak prisoners back across would have been unthinkably dangerous. Even now, the river was chin-high in places, the current formidable. Musi anxiously scanned the skies to make sure no thunderclouds were mounting on the horizon. "I prayed that there wouldn't be any rain before we got back," he would later write, "because it was the kind of river that could rise a couple of feet in a very short time." Fortunately, Pahota's guides were familiar with the spot in the Pampanga where the main stream forked into two shallower streams that coursed around a small island of silt. The current in these two subsidiary streams was weaker, and at their deepest points, the waters rose only to the men's thighs. Marching single file with their rifles clutched over their heads, the rangers easily forded the first stream, tramped over the soft sandbar, and then waded across the second channel to the far banks. While the rangers slipped across the river, Pahota's force split off to the left and Hosen's men to the right, each group vanishing in the bamboo thickets along the banks. Musi was more than a little concerned about the guerrillas. Never having worked with them before, he could only hope that they had the training, the wherewithal, and inclination to hold the road for as long as it took. His skepticism wasn't merely grounded in U.S. Army chauvinism. Guerrilla warfare, with its reliance on small-scale sniping, lightning ambush, and subterfuge, was vastly different from the sort of fixed battle that the guerrillas were now preparing to wage along Highway 5. Musi worried that in a direct confrontation with elite Japanese troops, the guerrillas might prematurely bolt, overwhelmed by the sustained potency of a well-trained, well-equipped regular army. It took 15 minutes for the long file of rangers to ford the warm brown waters of the Pampanga. Their pant legs soaked, they emerged from the muddy river into a Kogan field. They were in high spirits. After holing up for nearly 24 hours in Platero, they found an almost giddy sense of release in forward movement, in the simple camaraderie of marching again. As the men walked, Musi strode up and down the column, slapping backs, rallying with his staccato pep talk. He was a bantam, surging with resolve, the oldest man of the lot, and yet stoked with twice the energy of the others, a real pusher, as one ranger called him. More than anything, Henry Musi loved to march men. He took obvious pleasure in the elan, the sweaty effort, the sheer kinetics of it. He had the drill sergeant's mysterious knack for being, or at least seeming to be, everywhere at once, seeing everything. He made himself heard, and he made sure the men believed what he believed. As he marched alongside the men, his coaching voice was clear and insistent, without being shrill, and it had an irresistible quality that said, "You can do anything." He didn't bellow or holler or swear, recalled Ranger Howard Baker. He didn't need to. He had such a forceful voice that when he wanted something done, it got done in a hurry. "Musi was so charismatic you couldn't believe it," remembered Alvy Robbins. "He had this air of total confidence about him. If you ever had to go to war, that's the kind of man you wanted to go with." Vance Shears put it this way. We all would have died for him. He was the very best. Even the sober, circumspect Captain Prince, grimacing from the pain of his blistered feet, was inspired by Musi's effervescence. The man was just a born salesman, Prince recalled. We knew he was selling us blue sky, but we would have followed him anywhere.